Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. Today, we are joined by Jeff Scheffelbein, founder of Undivided Life. Jeff has worked for years in the corporate world and will be sharing with us how to create a selfless culture in the workplace as well as within our families. All right. Welcome, Jeff. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It's awesome to be here. We just recently got connected and we're already doing a podcast together. That's quick friendship.
Very excited. Thank you. So I just want to kind of dive right in. And you have this company called Undivided Life. Can you go in and just explain what that's all about and what you do for businesses?
Yeah, that's right. So Undivided Life, in its kind of umbrella version, is a consulting organization. And people would maybe call it management consulting, but we truly drill down into strategy and culture. And for us, that really, it's the foundation of that is the social teachings of the church, just that there's this playbook that none of us made up that really comes from the gospel teachings of Jesus Christ. But it's about how human beings thrive and how they work and what work was designed for. And the Catholic Church put awesome words to it. Most of us try to change those words and turn them into things about empowerment and subsidiary. Well, we don't say subsidiarity in the real world because it's six syllables and that's too many. But we take these principles about having a common good, you know, doing something of a higher purpose with dignity for others. It's this whole conscious capitalism mentality. I've been doing that for so long in so many businesses that we finally decided we would start our own consulting organization, help a lot of different companies, whether they're Catholic or not, for profit or not. That's not really the point. It's really our faith that drives us. And in addition to doing this consulting work and helping people to run their businesses better, we also do leadership development work. And then we start and or buy other companies, because why not, if you like doing this so much, also do it as a practitioner and not just as a consultant.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's very cool. So you've been in this for a long time. How would you say you've seen you're coming in and you're consulting and you're helping these businesses. How would you see the culture of businesses change over the time that you've been a part of this?
Well, and here's an interesting side note here. I've only been running this company for 15 months. Mm-hmm. We actually started this at the beginning of 2023, but it's a continuation of the work that I've been doing in starting other organizations and companies, in doing turnarounds with different organizations. And then this fundamental belief that what we're talking about is universal, because I've seen it in corporate and religious organizations, in small and large organizations. It's just like the fundamentals of human beings. What's interesting is all of a sudden people care about culture. You kind of talk about like, what's the difference today in organizational cultures versus, let's say, 5, 10, 15 years ago. I remember being one of the first people I ever met that was a chief culture officer. That was my title at my old company. And back then, people were just starting to talk about culture as being not just this nice to have or some sort of a cheesy HR function, but it actually being foundational to how a company runs. And so at the very least, I've seen this positive change that people put a spotlight on culture. They care a lot. They want it to happen. Unfortunately, most people don't know what that means. And so in the most practical application, most people are coming up with gimmicky, cheap ways to have culture, and then they don't get results. So they say that didn't work and they cut it. It's surface level. It's about how you feel, you know, like good times, not really how you feel in being developed and challenged and getting to experience some breakthrough together as a team. Mm-hmm. So I see that a lot. And then I'll tell you, way before COVID, I've always run my organizations, even when I was in big corporate, as a place where you treat people like fully formed adults, where they get to come to work and operate with this incredible dignity, and they know which way we're going and what we're doing, but they're given this freedom to do it the right way and to communicate with each other, and freedom to take time off when they need to. That was awesome before COVID. What's weird is that post-COVID, you know, we did that because we knew it was best for people, I believe, in those organizations. Now you have all these organizations that their cultures are pretty rotten because people are no longer connected to one another. So they've been working from home for so long. Everybody's remote. They talk about the great benefits of working remote, yet mentorship is lost. The older generations and their knowledge is starting to wax or wane. And even the older generation isn't being as challenged as much because they're not around younger people as often, because they're, even the people that aren't working from home, these mandated moments of come work from the office for Tuesdays and Thursdays, really still doesn't do it. That's just people working remotely near each other and not working together. So I've unfortunately seen a pretty big erosion in the shoulder knowledge that exists when people that we're a communal being, right? We're called to be in community with each other, doing things, creating things. And yet now we're efficiency machines. I can check off my whole list by 10:30 a.m. and cruise through the rest of the day and say I'm doing a good job. No, all you can say is you're efficient in doing some check boxes. That's not doing a good job. So it's been an interesting challenge to watch that the same people who used to do the right thing for others by giving them freedom should now do what's best for other people by creating real opportunities to come and build something together in person.
Mm. And you had mentioned, well, on your website, you have this phrase, and I thought I pointed this out because I think it's very powerful, but you desire to make your businesses more human, like in the sense of, you know, helping the business. So can you explain that? I think this is what you're kind of discussing right now, but can you explain it a little more what that means? Like, what are the steps that you take in consulting those businesses to make them more human?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think one of the things you got to start with is, why does it matter? And if I'm a business owner or business leader, I want to have the healthiest possible business, right? The healthiest possible business is going to have team members fully engaged, who act like owners, who take appropriate risks, who solve their own problems with one another, who have less turnover and better solutions. You know, it all kind of compounds. Well, we could try to get there by having a lot of rules and tying people up with a bunch of legal structures and treating them poorly, but it never works. What happens if you, instead of telling people to check their soul at the door and to get in line and to go along to get along, what if instead we helped people to really grow as a human being? That in your work environment, you were being formed, you were being trained, given the tools around communication and healthy conflict and how to take on a challenge from scratch and develop something with the help of others so that you're setting proper expectations and achieving those together. Now all of a sudden you have this fulfillment in work. Work becomes a place where you can leave work knowing that you've achieved something today that wasn't just mediocre or middle of the road, but it was meaningful. And I think then you come home to your spouse and your kids and your loved ones and your community. I think you come home as a better person. And so by humanizing work, we're actually just focused on forming the human individual that works with us and knowing that if they are growing, the company is going to be the benefactor of that, or the industry or the client or whoever is going to benefit from that. But if all I care about is profit, I will be doing that at the expense of the human and at the expense of investing in them for their sake. And I end up getting the results that people typically get, which is high turnover and mediocre products and a whole lot of greed and what's in it for me mentality. Mm-hmm. We work too much for us to be in places that are run that way. And unfortunately, a lot of them are.
And this kind of goes along with, so our monthly theme is kind of, it's about fighting selfishness, and like working towards a more selfless, environment for families as well in the workplace. So do you have any, examples or stories about how you saw within, you know, your previous work or even within the past, within Undivided Life, how this making it more human actually makes it more selfless? And like, that's kind of the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine this. Imagine you're running a sales team and a typical sales team is very much like me against you. I got to be the leader. If I don't get the lead, you get the lead, you get the client. And so it becomes kind of backstabbing or at least very protectionist, but people are afraid of losing their jobs. They're afraid of not being seen for the value that they have. And they really want to take care of their family. So they'll do whatever it takes to keep their job. What if instead you have this culture of coaching where every one of your employees, including every member of the sales team, understands a higher purpose than just making money? They see that a collaborative environment is going to lead to better results for clients, that better results for clients leads to these snowball moments of growth and impact so that your whole organization is doing better. And therefore everyone has a chance of doing better both financially and in their own growth. And now all of a sudden, people are sharing leads. They are trying to go work on accounts together because they know that getting 50% or 25% of this client attributed to me is way better than getting either zero of it because we don't win it, or 100% of it and I'm in a backstabbing environment that people are used to coming from. So we've created these sales environments where people will say that they're part of a team and they have an individual goal as well. And what you watch is clients can't believe what it's like to work with a sales team, that they never have to worry if their salesperson is sick or on the golf course or anything else, because everybody else is stepping up and taking care of them. And it comes back to you, right? The more you kind of give without any expectation of a return, the more it pays off. And that would be my advice, right? For anybody, just go 6 months where every day you're doing something good for other people. You're solving a problem. You're taking care of something without any expectation of a return. Like that magnanimity of, there's another big word, of taking care of other people. That's one of the best strategies I've ever seen, because the strategy is actually fulfilling in the moment and over the long term. And even as a leader, how many chances do you have to shed the light on your team and your people and the work that everybody's doing when things are going well? But often leaders will take the credit. And then at the same time, when things are going poorly, raise your hand and say, that's on me. Did I give the right expectations, the right timeline, the right clarity? What could I have done differently to empower and educate and equip my team? That's on me. That's like the two-way mirror, right? I'm going to give you credit when it's good, and I'm going to take the brunt of it, you know, rightfully so, when I haven't set you up to understand or be in a place where you can have success. Mm. So I hope that answers the selflessness. I mean, it's the greatest way. If you wanted to just be, for a second, if you wanted to be, let's just say greedy for a second, you wanted to have an organization that's growing a lot, try selflessness for a year and watch the way your team acts. It's very different. Mm-hmm. And the results are too. Mm.
Yeah. And I would assume that, you know, working in that environment, people are probably happier and then thus do a better job anyways, because they're not being pressured to be, you know, something that they are, you know, not as motivated to participate in. And
Mary Grace, imagine this, like if you go back to what we were saying about our spouses earlier, if an employee goes home often and is the best version of themselves and they're fulfilled and they're excited about work, then they even show up to their family differently. So their family starts to support the organization more and more. Well, then bad days still happen, right? You have a long week at work, something bad falls through and everybody's got to scramble. You're more likely to have spouses and kids supporting your company through that employee during those bad times, because they know how good the company's been, how much it made their loved one a better person. And so it's like that, hang in there. You know, this is just a rough patch, because you're working at a place where they actually care about you, and they care about you, the individual, and they're helping you to be formed. And so it really does compound over time.
And would you say like, what would be some of the most, that's an ideal, obviously, to have like a work environment that looks like that. Have you experienced, like, what are some of the hardest environments that you either seen or worked in, or that have been the most challenging to either transform or to just even like work in?
Yeah. I mean, there's some super bad ones, right? There's the places where people are a commodity and they're designed to tear you up and spit you out, almost to get the very best of you in a short amount of time. And then you're expendable. It's why I hate saying people are our best assets. I know people don't really mean it that way, but assets are on a balance sheet. And I would rather see people as not being on a balance sheet, but being uniquely positioned. So I've been in the very toxic. I will say that I got into deregulated energy back in 2004. And imagine before it was deregulated, people didn't have a choice. They couldn't go to a different competitor for their electricity. Mm-hmm. And so when I first joined, my teammates around the company would talk about the clients of ours as ratepayers. You know, how many ratepayers did we have? Because back in the day, you couldn't move. And that was such a weird mentality shift to go from that to calling them clients. And it was really a place where people had thought that the reason work exists and the reason a company exists is to make money and especially to make money for the shareholders, you know, the public stock or the owners of the business. And we acted that way. And we went through a pretty radical transformation over a few years of just focusing on and diving deep into culture. And I started in a small little pocket of the commercial sales department. And I just told them, don't worry about any of the rules. We're going to do stuff our way. And we started winning, right? The scoreboard started drawing more and more attention. A new executive came in and said, what's going on in this department? How can we have more of this? By the time that organization got sold, now 8 years after I started, we went from our company exists to make money to the purpose of our company is to help people. And the way that we help people is through our expertise with energy. And so that's a mindset shift that's totally different. How do we help people every day? If you go achieve that, go help people every day. See what it looks like again a year from now. Very different.
Yeah. And you know, that mindset shift, how would you say that that culture, let's say from work, a spouse comes home from work. You talked a little bit about coming home from work. How could a spouse come home and kind of implement kind of these ideas that you're talking about in their own family life? I know that the podcast that we do is about families and giving them advice on how to have a good, happy, healthy marriage and family life. So how could a husband or a wife come home from work and bring those like really human aspects of their work and bring those back to their family?
Mary Grace, I've been married for 13 years. I have 7 children, ages 10 all the way down to 3 months. So I care more about this question than any of the business questions. Mm-hmm. The coaching that we give to leaders and to employees in companies is completely translatable or transferable, I should say, into the home. First and foremost, we talk about if there's any sort of a conflict or a discord or a need for coaching, don't just surprise people by jumping in and talking about your grievance and catching them off guard. The same could be said for spouses, for coworkers. Instead, set the table. I would say to my wife, Amanda, when you have a few minutes, I have some feedback I want to be able to give you. Can you let me know when is a good time, or I need to be vulnerable about something? That's same at the home or at work, where I might say to my business partner, hey, Nick, I have some coaching I want to give you. Can you let me know when you have a few minutes? And all I'm doing is giving him a mental moment to transition, be in a place of receiving, open up and be vulnerable, and then also to be ready to share back with me. And it's a game changer than walking in and saying, Nick, did you know blah, 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 or Amanda, I didn't like whatever, and I catch people off guard. So set the table. Two more that I want to say. One is, often at work, we've done a poor job of acknowledging why something is being miscommunicated, articulating a new version so that we both are back on the same page, and then having an action plan. We sit around stewing about this person thinks this and they're always doing this to me, and we make up this narrative in our head. But people do this about their spouses all the time. But instead, if they said, hey, I want to acknowledge that you and I aren't on the same page right now, and I can see some of the ways we got here, can we talk about it a little bit? Then can we articulate, what would an ideal state look like? What are we trying to achieve together? What do we need to do to kind of change that? And then what's the action plan to go forward? And so now we've kind of put that past in a moment and moved on together with clarity. So that's my number two. Then I love creating shared experiences at work. And a shared experience is not a happy hour. It's not somebody's birthday. Those things happen all the time. A shared experience is fundamentally unique. You don't get to do it over and over. So it's this moment in time that people will look back on at work. But shouldn't we be doing that with our families, creating these experience moments that everybody remembers that day, that moment, that time that we were all laughing in this very unique setting, right? We got out of the home this Saturday and we went and did something we'd never done before, might never do again, but we'll never forget it. So that it wasn't just another day sitting around doing the same old stuff. And if I may, Mary Grace, I want to tell you that my 3-year-old son was recently diagnosed with brain cancer, and it's extremely serious. It's rare, it's one of a kind, and it's very aggressive. And next Monday, he starts 33 days of radiation treatment and then eventually some chemo. And when I think of at 3 years old, how many shared experiences have I created? And we've done pretty good. But how many other times did I take the easy road and just do the same old thing and not put any intention behind it? And God willing, you know, he'll be holding my hand someday at my deathbed, and we'll be looking back at hundreds and hundreds of shared experiences, but I'm not going to miss a single moment to bring that lesson from my workplace back into my home.
Wow. Thank you. That's, well, we keep him in our prayers.
Thank you. His name is Benedict. He goes by Benny, and I cry about him every day because he just lights up my whole world, and he gives us all this reminder of how fragile everything is.
Yes. Well, we'll definitely keep him in our prayers, and we will keep you and your family and your wife and your other children in our prayers as well.
Thank you.
Just to kind of finish off a little bit, do you have any other things you'd like to add to creating that culture of selflessness in the workplace, whether that's at work or in your family life? Do you have anything else that you'd kind of like to finish?
I do. I want to say this. If you think about work for a second here, what we're talking about is countercultural. We're taught in our culture to do just the opposite, to look out for number one, to send reply all emails, to make sure that somebody else is the bad guy on this entire thread. We fight about fighting instead of even just going solving solutions together. And unfortunately, the more that we become part of that system, the more I think our brains start to think that way in general. And if you think about, I know you've seen this in marriage counseling and in marriage prep. If we're both pushing on a boulder and I push it over, I'm crushing my wife, right? But if we get on the same side of the boulder and move it out of the way, then we're problem solving together. That exists in work and exists in home. And there's no reason why we can't be countercultural in both and create these vibrant, loving, amazing places where, as an organization or as a family, you can go through trials like what I'm experiencing right now and still be faithful and joyful and hopeful, even while you're sorrowful and, you know, dealing with all the mess that comes along with it. So just be countercultural, because I don't ever want to be part of the culture that has taught us otherwise.
Right. Those are great words of advice, I would say. Thank you. And how can our listeners find you and actually, you know, find your Undivided Life and anything else that you work with?
You bet. So our website's very easy to find because it is actually the name of our company. It's undivided.life, which is pretty cool. We also have a website set up for the speaking that I do all over the U.S., both the corporate organizations, church organizations, men's conferences, and that's just jeffshuffelbein.com. And you'd have to put that in the show notes because my name's crazy. And then last but not least, I write content every day on LinkedIn, every morning. And somehow in the last almost 2 years, I took the most boring platform in America and turned it into a ministry for business, faith, and family by writing every single day. And I think people are so thirsty for real talk and real conversations on business. And it's in no way combative, but it is absolutely practical and challenging. So if anybody wants to follow on LinkedIn, it's just /Shufflebein, and you'll find me on there as well.
Perfect. And we'll link all that in the show notes. Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being on the show and sharing with us your expertise.
Thank you, Mary Grace. A blessing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovestshrine.org.